everybody. Welcome again to No Filter Sports. Very special edition. Down here, I am at least at Chateau Page in West Palm Beach. Denny McClain in New York. Denny McClain in Ferndale, Michigan. And off we go. And Bob, I want to thank you for your hospitality. Your house is really nice. You got a great bachelor pad. And Denny, I don't know if you've seen the first episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm this year, where Larry gives Susie Essman, Jeff Garland's wife, a big portrait of herself.
Over Bob's bed.
It's a beautiful portrait of Bob over his bed. And seriously, you can see Paige through the years in the shrine to his career. There's the occasional picture of a girlfriend or a daughter, but mostly it's AAB, which is all about Bob.
I had a friend at one time call it the Bob Page Museum wherever I lived, and my longtime significant other calls it the Bob is God home.
And by the way, this will not change the opinions of any of our listeners who know Bob is a very modest, self-effacing, a non-attention-grabbing type of character who always defers to others.
And so never,
it's
ever.
It's gratifying to see that's the case.
And he never, ever uses the word I.
Never. So we couldn't get this hookup working this morning. So I got to call my old lady up in Manhattan before she goes to the law office. And so she and Eli are talking about how to do this. And they're just both of them are just dumping all over me.
Yeah.
It was. I'm sitting there. I got to take this crap in my own home.
Well, she's the one with the underlying anger. I just played into it. So I don't live with you and put up with the abuse on a daily basis, which can be a far more trying. Anyway, let's talk about it. Wait, I said the word anyway. You're supposed to tell me when that's my verbal crutch that I'm trying to eliminate.
We don't mind. That's all good.
It's all good.
Mark D'Antonio resigned. Was it yesterday or the day before? Probably Tuesday.
It's interesting that you say that because right away it's about a choice of verbs, isn't it? Did he resign? Did he retire? Was he pushed out? I don't know.
Did he buckle? Did he finally buckle?
Yes, he did that. That's another good verb.
To say the least, because just one thing. We now know what he distorted the truth about, or whatever term you want to use about telling the truth, about a compliant officer. He said a compliant officer was notified of a change that they'd made. Yeah. And lo and behold, a compliance officer came forward and said, no, I don't know anything about it. So maybe that's the thing that breaks the camel's back.
I don't know if we'll ever get to the full bottom of it. By the way, we're going to talk to Fred Heumann, longtime Lansing TV guy over 20 years.
And Detroit, worked with you in Detroit.
He was the best street reporter that I ever had. Try and get some insight. And there's a lot of, we're speculating, where's the dirt here? Where's the ugliness that we don't see? I think it's pretty simple, and I can even use my best guess, a Michigan State example. When somebody is dirty, whether it's his fault or not, and by the way, Rick Pitino and the great coaches have a way of deferring or displacing the blame to underlings who do the dirty work, whether it's Chuck Person at Auburn, et cetera, you have to move on from that. So if he remains as coach, even though the university says they'll support him any way, shape, or form, it's going to continue to come up and continue to grind. Just like they get rid of Stoltz, what his guilt level was, I don't remember back then, it's the 70s. You need a new face so that you can move forward and put, just like Paterno had to go, not putting D'Antoni in Paterno's class at all, but he's going to continually get grinded over this. Even yesterday, when he had to answer, or Tuesday, how much did the allegations play into your retirement? Of course, he said zero. We know that's a lie, but everything else may be basically the truth. You speculated, Bob, all last season. He's been there long enough. He's won everything. He seems distracted.
When everything came up, you knew that he was going to be in trouble. I think Denny even flat out predicted that D'Antonio would not be back next year. The issue, again, if they're saying in the MSU brain trust, and boy, that's an oxymoron. What they're saying is, this had nothing to do with it. All I know is that the Lansing State Journal, the Detroit News, and other news sources published on Tuesday more of what was revealed, what had not been revealed about D'Antonio and
Curtis Blackwell.
Blackwell. And so it's funny that those stories come out. I didn't think they were really shocking. And suddenly D'Antonio resigns, retires, is pushed, 4 hours afterwards? And oh, by the way, the day before the national signing date.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great time to quit. What's going to happen to your recruits now? Well, one of their top running backs from Georgia is already saying, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Here's what got my attention. Taking the $4 million and then resigning. I don't know if the two are related or unrelated, but that just looks bad.
Well, you knew he was going to do that.
Well, I understand that. But, you know, if you take the $4 million, don't you have to coach one more year? Don't you really have to? And especially, but just the day before the national signing, a lot of kids out there have been talking to Michigan State about coming there. A lot of people have been promised possibly to come there on scholarships. And now what? Where do these kids go?
Well, they had to. Isn't it more fair to do it now? Isn't it more fair to do it now than later when they don't know who's going to be their new coach? So they signed. They can still defer, can't they?
Yeah, but
and
I
so
think,
that just makes the timing makes sense to me. And since they support him, they support D'Antoni, so they will defend him to the nth degree. None of this would have happened except for Curtis Blackwell. Let's just say before we go on, the reason this all came out is because Curtis Blackwell, who was an assistant coach when the Austin Robertson thing where he assaulted a woman on campus after they had the big meetings because he was a questionable character before he came there. That he's saying I am the scapegoat, which well he may be. We've seen this happen in many, many other cases.
But these latest allegations that surfaced in the media reports about alleged NCAA violations on the part of D'Antonio, speculation now is, and you know they will, the NCAA is going to look into the Michigan State program. I mean, one of the things was D'Antonio's got a recruiting trip down to Detroit, and he brings Blackwell with him. Now, Blackwell technically is not supposed to recruit off campus. So he brought him with him. You know, BFD, if you're going to get D'Antonio or get Michigan State or get anybody, I got to have some meat here. I got to see that D'Antonio was buying kids or their parents or their high school coaches, whomever, and nobody, to my knowledge, is alleging that.
But let me give you one fact about the D'Antonio visit with Blackwell downtown Detroit. D'Antonio denies that he took him into the home with the parents. He never introduced him to the parents.
Yeah, he says he left him in the car.
Left him in the car. So now, the more I read about it, and I used to do a lot of this with this thing when it first came out, it's more of a he said, she said. And the only, and certainly we don't know a whole lot about this yet, but when that compliant officer, that's a really important item. Just think about that. It's one little question, one bad answer. Boy, that can sink your ship pretty quick.
There are certain tacit agreements that they all make in a system that is essentially corrupt. And the reason it's essentially corrupt for all the many, many reasons is that most of these players do not qualify as students. So as part of the charade, there are the hoax, to use a common word these days in America. Part of the hoax is that they're true student athletes, and so they all cut corners. Then it comes down to who's cutting a corner that maybe goes a little bit beyond, because they're all kind of dirty, but just like cheating in baseball, Denny, not to push it too far.
Right.
There's certain types of cheating that we all agree we got to cheat. There's certain things we got to do. And so beyond that, then, well, how dirty is dirty?
So
that's why this one, if not Curtis Blackwell coming up and being and instead of being the good soldier, falling on the sword, letting them, push him out and make him the reason for the Austin Robertson. He said, hell no, I'm going to sue all you bitches. And that's what he did.
And one other thing, I don't know if either one of you saw it the other night, because I know how busy of a social schedule you both gentlemen have. That, in fact,
82 and sunny today, pal.
Well, 22 and 4 inches of snow. So what do you want me to say? I mean, this is where we are. But the thing about it is, it just killed me the other night when D'Antonio comes out between
D'Antonio
and comes out and makes this goodbye speech. I don't get it. He was there for 15 seconds.
All 25 seconds of it.
Yeah. What the hell was that all about? Did we really need to know? We already knew he resigned.
He did it on Twitter. Is kind of weird.
Was it 6 to 8 weeks ago on this program that I delivered a near soliloquy in which I said, assuming D'Antonio was going to go, if he were going to go, there is only one person on this planet for this job, and that of course would be Luke Fickell. And I told everybody why Luke Fickell is the one person for this job. Tim Stout, with whom I broke into the business in 1974 in Lansing, has been there ever since. I forget which coach it was years ago, but Stout, who was not a controversial guy in Lansing, comes on television, and the first words out of his mouth were, quote, Michigan State, you've blown it again. Now, I'm already seeing Stout reported last night that Luke Fickell and Pat Narduzzi are out of consideration. They are, again, according to Stout, and we'll talk to Freddie Heumann about this, Pat Shermer and Mike Tressel are the top two candidates. They're talking about Matt Campbell at Iowa State, but he's got a huge buyout. And you know what? You can't sell him. He had a bad first year. Then he had a bunch of 8-6s and Fleabag bowls. How do you sell Pat Shermer after he got fired by the Giants? It's got to be Luke Fickell. Michigan State, don't blow it.
Well, there's one thing about Fickell. They say this is the best recruiting class he's ever had.
At Cincinnati.
You know, maybe he doesn't want to go. I didn't hear him say, hey, I'm coming up to Lansing tomorrow yet.
That's a no-brainer for him.
Well, you know, apparently, and let's hear what Mark D'Antonio said about this, that he feels there will not be any trouble finding a fabulous coach for Michigan State.
People will run to here. They'll crawl here. Michigan State will get an outstanding football coach that'll care about young people. They have a great foundation coming back. This program is one. A lot more than it's lost, as indicated by 13 years and what has happened here. They're on the threshold of building new facilities. There are so many things happening here.
Well, then we're going to get the speech about, well, now you got to work with us for a couple of years because, you know, we've got a new coach, we've got a new system, we've got a new program, and we're not ready to really to jump out in the middle of the street right now. So it's going to take us a couple of years.
He's kind of saying not that. Of course, they got to say not that. That he's going to help. He may help with the search process. Yeah. He may help approve the coach. And so he's kind of making it sound like there will be a smooth transition.
And it looks like he's going to stay on the payroll.
Yeah.
Yes.
You guys want to move on to the commercial break, and then we got a lot of baseball to talk about because we'll come back to D'Antonio later on in the show.
Yeah.
We can do that because, by the way, this is a true story. This morning, Bob said, you can read that? I said, of course I can read that.
That's true, really. His eyes are amazing, thanks to Dr. Yeldo.
Then I showed him microscopic print on the side of the cereal box, and he was stunned by that. That's because I got, you ready, multifocal lenses from Dr. Yeldo that cured my nearsighted, my farsighted, my everything for life. I'm 70 years old, almost. Don't remind me. It's next month. Jesus Christ.
And you're almost 70 and you're almost pretty.
That's
one thing nobody's ever said about Eli Zara.
Anyway, you can see perfectly up close and far away, no matter your age, no matter your prescription. There are a number of procedures that Dr. Yeldo delivers completely, 100% safely. He is the best. So be done with glasses. Be done with reading glasses. Denny's got his bifocals on. Bob's got his reading glasses. I got nothing on. Just call 1-800-398-EYES. 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. The evaluation is free.
Now, our friends at Hall Financial have some questions for our listeners. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have lingering high interest rate credit card debts? You may or may not know that right now the rates are within fractions of a percentage point of their lows of the last 10 years. A smart idea would be pick up the phone right now, 248-308-5000, and call David Hall or DavidHallMortgage.com. It would be a great time to call. They've got all kinds of money right now to pass out. Hall Financial has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients for a real serious reason. They're good. If you want to check in to see if something makes sense to you, for your family and yourself, go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started or call 248-308-5000 and make sure to tell them that I sent you, Denny, Eli, and Bob. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435.
And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Before we move on from the D'Antonio story, before we talk to Fred, Michigan State, or Curtis Blackwell, refused to talk to the investigators that Michigan State hired. Now, is this legit when you hire somebody to investigate yourself? We know that that can be a highly biased procedure. And they hired a company called the Jones Day Law Firm to review what happened at Michigan State. Should they have gone to an outside, let somebody else recommend? Or when you hire your own people to investigate you, maybe that's why Blackwell didn't talk to them.
I worked with Jones Day a couple of times in my life. They're great. It's a monster law firm all over the world. So they're not some little independent outfit with just a little shingle on the front door. If they're involved, you know what? Their rates are sky high, and they do a hell of a job, and they come back to you with as much information, I think, as anybody could grab. But they're a real serious operation.
This has been, you go back to Nassar, You go back to this mess, which is far from over. This has been utterly humiliating. It is showing once again that, as I don't mind admitting, I've always said, state is second rate. Now, can we move on to baseball?
Yes. Where would you like to move?
I got one quick thought. It just appears to me for a long time that nobody's really watching the balls that are bouncing around over in Lansing. That's the way it appears. You had the Nassar thing and all these other little issues. You had kids who were coming to the college despite the fact they had a couple of rapes, and that guy's serving 10 years now. So, I mean, nobody's watching the ball. They got to get better at the ball.
It's disgraceful. Now, Danny, listen up. Here we got these names, all right, because I'm going to want your comments. Yeah. So as we all know, after turning down how much? $300 million over 10 years. The Red Sox had no choice but to trade Mookie Betts, which they have done, though, as we record this, the deal is being held up because one of the young players has to pass a physical. So these are the names. Mookie gets traded to the Dodgers. David Price, the former Tiger, goes with him, and Cash from Boston. It's a three-team deal. Minnesota gets Kenton Maeda, who's a very good closer, I think, as most people know. The Red Sox get two young players you've never heard of before, probably.
Kenton Maeda is a starter.
Bruce Star Gratterall?
Maeda's a starter.
Maeda's a starter.
Oh, he is. Okay, thank you, Brandon, because Brandon really follows baseball. Now, I'm going to want your opinion on this, too, Brandon, because you are on top of it. And then separately, the Dodgers traded Jock Peterson, I always thought he was a pretty good player, to the Angels for Luis Rengifo, I guess his name. Now, Betts is a free agent. At the end of this coming season, the Dodgers are confident they can sign him. Fellas, take it away.
Why? Oh, you want to start, Danny? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Red Sox fans are furious. It's so funny when you look at what we deal with in Detroit with the Tigers. The Red Sox, what, they won two World Series or three World Series in this century. Yep. And they contended so many other years. And now they're calling them cheap. You know, they're pissed off. They didn't sign this guy. They offered him $300 million. And the Red Sox are kind of on a quick rebuild. They want to stay under the luxury tax, which is $208 million. Last year, the Dodgers were over the luxury tax, which of $4.3 million, you got to pay dollar for dollar if you're over the $208 million. And so, you know, it's funny the way this works, that the Dodgers now are able to, because the Astros, they say, basically stole the World Series for them. So, you know, we're going to go steal somebody else's player, and they get Mookie Betts to made up. And this is your thing about Marvin Miller. They're like trading baseball cards as kids. And so Mookie Betts is not a Red Sox for life. How can the Red Sox fans be mad at the team when Mookie turned down $300 million, a pretty decent offer?
I don't get it.
I think it's a pretty decent offer.
How do you turn down $300 million?
Thank you, Marvin Miller, Denny.
Oh, no, and I thank Marvin Miller. I think it's the right thing. I mean, if somebody's got that kind of dough and they want to offer it to him and want to buy his services, it's okay with me. If he only lasts a month, it's okay with me. But I just don't understand why he wouldn't take the Boston Red Sox deal. I just don't understand it. All that money, and he was a monster hero there. Monster hero.
If he was unhappy there, and I haven't heard that he was. John Henry, the Red Sox owner, to pick up on what Eli just said, has been quoted as saying, we want to be under the luxury tax.
Right.
Well, then you offer a guy $300 million. What's that going to do? The whole thing is just very, very weird.
Unless he just wanted to play in L.A., he's allowed to do that.
I think most players would either like to play in New York or L.A. at least a year or two. I know.
Not
I did,
Boston?
Too. Boston? Yeah, Boston, East Coast, that would be fine, too. But, I mean, New York, L.A., I mean, it's kind of, you know, the dog and pony show. And if you're successful, you'd like to be a part of the dog and pony show. And that's what this is all about.
How many – it could be. How many times do I have to tell both of you blockheads that if the union says – you're 28 years old. You're capable of being the next Mike Trout if you aren't already. Bryce Harper got 330. Yeah. You have a value higher than that, and you owe it to your fellow players to get as much money as the market will bear. So actually, Mookie
and I say, mind your own bleeping business.
Now, Mookie Betts takes a risk. What if he suffers a career-ending knee injury this year for the mere $27 million, which they own, which he could have made $300 million? So this is all a calculation that we just can't say, because $300 million is more money than any human being that isn't already a billionaire can relate to. I can't relate to $300 million. Neither can you, and neither can you, Bob, because anything over you know, a couple of million is beyond belief for most people. Yeah, so yeah. It's a business transaction. It's a union versus it's a union situation with management, and it's just what it is.
All right, let's bring our producer Brandon McAfee in here, as I promised, and because he is a young guy who's involved in all these, you know, fantasy baseball leagues, and he really follows us. Among all of these guys traded among three teams, Brandon, how do you look at this deal?
I look at this deal as huge for the Dodgers. You're looking at a team that now has Betts, Bellinger, Pollock, Turner, Seager, Muncy. This is a stacked team. You have Kershaw, Walker Buehler, and Alex Wood in your rotation. That team is going to be stacked, I'm telling you. The Twins, obviously, they were the top team in the AL Central. Kenta Maeda, he's a serviceable starter. I don't think he's, you know, that
he's not
great.
Flashy anymore.
So
right?
Ultimately, I think LA wins the trade, and then Boston is just looking long term. But this is going to be a
you know
big
these
year
kids,
for the
Dodgers. Brandon? You know who these kids are?
I know
Verdugo,
some of them.
I guess Graterol and Renjifo.
Well, I don't know them when you say it like that, but yes, I've seen
Alex
that
Verdugo, those. Brustar, Graterol, and Louis Renjifo, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, but the trade is all about Betts. That's what the whole trade is. I mean, right. Everything else is a little sprinkling around it. By the way, his $300 million is guaranteed, either with insurance applications or by ball clubs or Major League Baseball, by the way. They get involved in some of this, too, when it comes to serious, serious guarantees that are required.
Well, and you look, okay, so the 10 years for $300 million is $30 million a year. Yeah. The going rate is a little bit more than that. There's pitchers getting 35 now. His saying 12 years and 420, that's not coming from Mookie Betts. That's coming from his agent. And the Players Association, sure. And an analysis of teams' various, you know, capabilities to pay. That's what it is. This is much bigger than Mookie Betts turning down. And I gave you the example with Bobby Higginson many years ago, where it was 4 years, $36 million he asked for. Tigers offered 34. Bobby said, take it. Just take it to his agent. Take the money. And he says, no, we have to wait. And they wound up settling for 35. But at that point, the $9 million a year, whatever it was for him, was important in lifting, as they say, as lifting the other boats to rise up to him. But the Dodgers, man, the Dodgers, I guess they have more fans going to their ballpark. It's a bigger ballpark than the Red Sox.
Well, it's not only that.
And they
don't
care what they spend. And they've been screwed twice, okay?
Yeah.
They got screwed in 17 by the Astros, who cheated. They got screwed in 18 by the Red Sox, who are under the gun for cheating. And they lose the division series last year. Who'd they lose it to last year? Brandon would remember. I don't. But in any case, they don't care what they spend. They draw 3.5 million people a year. They're an incredibly rich franchise. And now, as Brandon suggested, they're unstoppable.
And by the way, they've got and where they get all their money from, obviously, is all kinds of pay radio and TV. Because they've got like 8 or 9 or 10, I think, radio networks around the world, you know, Spanish and in other languages. So they've got it all.
One,
just like the Yankees. Same thing with the Yankees.
All right, here's one for you and Eli primarily.
Are you moving on to another topic?
No, okay. I'm not. Because I've never understood how baseball gambling works. Brandon just was talking about the Dodgers being a favorite. So at whatever this is, you probably know it, the Westgate Superbook, the Dodgers have now moved from plus 450 to plus 350 to win it all. The Yankees remain the World Series favorite this year at plus 300. So you can translate that for some people.
And will that change with the injury to James Paxton? So we'll see.
Yeah, I saw that too, as a matter of fact, that he's hurt for the Yankees. Yeah.
And part of this deal, by the way, because David Price, the Dodgers agreed to pay half of Price's salary, right. Which they owe him $96 million the next 3 years, which is $32 million a year. That's why Mookie Betts could not sign for a mere $30 million a year where the going rate is much higher.
Just and what does that mean, guys? I just ask you both, what does that mean? The Dodgers are plus 350 to win the World Series. What does that mean?
That means that if you – go ahead, Denny.
If you got to bet 450 to win 350. That's what it means. So your numbers, the favorite always gets the less odds but the longer numbers. You see what I'm saying?
No, but yeah. That's okay.
No, okay.
I'm sure other people get it.
When you're minus 350, it means you're the favorite, and you bet $1. Well, you know what? Go on. I can't.
No, that's not that, because they say the Yankees remain the World Series favorite at plus 300.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't that mean that if you bet a dollar on them, you only win 350?
You only win 350. Dollar right. For 350. A dollar for
and
350.
That's really right. Bad odds, considering there's 30 teams in baseball, and instead of getting 30 to 1, you're only getting 3.5 to 1.
Right. Right. Well, I can report to you guys exclusively that there is no change in the odds of the Detroit Tigers winning this year's World Series. Danny, do you know what those odds are?
Zero, because somebody said they can't win anything. They can't win. I mean, I just read an article the other day. God, I wish I'd have brought it. They're predicting they won't win 50 games.
The Tigers are going off at 1,000-1.
Yeah.
But in our Misery Loves Company department, both the Orioles and the Marlins are also 1,000-1.
And they're all really bad odds because they have no
–
but here's the good news, though.
Bad.
The Tigers are $98 million under the luxury tax.
Yeah, good.
So they could now acquire – maybe they could sign Mookie Betts.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's time to sell the club now since you've got the numbers and the money way down below the line. Hey, now let's find the buyer for the ball club and let's put some baseball people in there who really understand the nature of the game.
You know, when you go back to last year and the big off-season numbers that went down, of course, this year Gerrit Cole got what 300 and something. But, you know, Bryce Harper last year and Manny Machado got the $300 million-plus, and I don't think they really delivered for their teams this year.
Well, Machado was hurt for quite a while, right?
Yeah, he was hurt, and also Harper had a very mediocre season.
Very
mediocre.
See,
boys.
I've never
Pete
been
Rose.
As
Pete Rose.
And by the way, just before we go to Pete, I've never been impressed by Harper. Never. I just don't think he is the player that everybody thought he was.
So, Pete, as you know, asked Commissioner Rob Manfred on Wednesday morning to remove his name from MLB's ineligible list,
which
would allow him to at least be considered for induction into the Hall of Fame. He and his lawyers argue that Manfred has recently opted not to punish players guilty of major game-changing rules infractions, and as a result, should end Rose's ban. The lawyers say Pete's lifetime ban is, quote, vastly disproportionate when you compare it to MLB's punishment of players who took performance-enhancing drugs and the players involved in the Astros sign-stealing scandal.
See, here's two good examples here of something wrong in the commissioner's office. A number of years ago, we talked about this. 106 people tested positive for the drugs. Now you've got all kinds of guys who tested positive for stealing signs. Nobody gets punished except the manager and a coach and what have you. I mean, what the hell is going on? Do we just – so not everybody's guilty even if they are. I don't get it. I don't understand what kind of a system they're using, or are they putting their heads in the sand and just saying, well, let's pick them as they come along. Because this is wrong not to punish the players. This is all players. And when they got the administration involved, of course, now they got the technical advantage. But, you know, it's all players. And the guy that, I'm so disappointed in is Verlander, because he's supposed to be the stand-up guy, and he did not do the right thing.
You know, when Rose's lawyers say the lifetime ban is vastly disproportionate, did you just read that quote, by the way, when compared with MLB's punishment of the performance?
Yeah, I just read that.
Yeah, okay. I thought I heard that. I was searching for something else. You know, there can't be one set of rules for Mr. Rose and another for everyone else. This has changed his views remarkably, because it was just a short time ago, a couple months ago, we had him on our show, and Pete predicted that he would never get into the Hall of Fame because this opening hadn't happened. Here's what he said.
I'm a perfect example. If don't break your rules, you're going to suffer the consequences. So I'm done with it, okay, because I know I have no chance to go in the Hall of Fame until I die. And that's fine, because I'm the one that made the mistake. They've always looked at gambling different than drugs or spousal beating or alcohol. They've always looked at that different than they did gambling.
So he goes from thinking he's going to have to die to get in, and now there's a lot of I heard a few national radio commentators saying you can't keep him out any longer. And you know, Danny, this comes down to what you were saying about this whole pitch stealing scam. We don't know as non-players what's legit, what isn't, what's cheating, what isn't, what's just being a gamesmanship and being clever as opposed to blatantly breaking the rules. And so it's all kind of murky. And you know what? Isn't there a statute of limitations at some point? Pete Rose is Pete Rose. And what he did no more defiles the game than Barry Bonds getting his last 150 homers on steroids or Roger Clemens winning all those games. But other steroid guys are in.
You missed the pitch. The pitch was right down the middle and you missed it. What about the guys from the 1919 Sox? What about those guys? Do they get the same flag? Do they get the same pass? If they don't all get a pass, then nobody gets a pass. And I'm telling you, if you read the report, it's a 221-page report, the Dowd report, and in there it will absolutely show you that he bet on the Cincinnati Reds and bet against them.
All right, let's talk about
Time out. not disagreeing with that. Someday the steroid guys will get in. Someday maybe Pete Rose will get in. And someday we'll understand, you know, about the Astros. The thing is, paradigms change.
Sure.
A 100 years ago, women couldn't vote. Now they can run for president. 100 years ago, or 20 years ago, a gay guy could never run for office. Now one can run for president. So these are the myths. These are the paradigms that we have in our mind, and they change. So what Bart Giamatti said in 1989 doesn't necessarily have to hold to what we see today. That's why I think Pete Rose will get in. And I think this one shows the hypocrisy in saying who's cheating, who isn't, and to what degree is this right and what you did is wrong.
But none of these guys ever got back in the game who were suspended forever. None of them have ever been allowed back in the game. None of them. So Pete's going to be the first one? I don't think so.
Who else are you talking about? You talking about Barry Bonds?
Start with 1919. Just start with those guys and then go forward. There's a bunch of them that have been suspended indefinitely.
You can't talk about Bonds because, Mark McGwire has already been working as a coach in Major League
Baseball. Yeah, he's in baseball already. And so is Bonds. Bonds is a hitting instructor with the Giants.
He is. Here's what I wanted to go to, speaking of the Hall of Fame. The Phillies have announced that Roy Halladay's uniform number, 34, on May 29th, is going to be retired. That's the 10th anniversary of his perfect game. Yeah, he only played the last 4 years of his career in Philly, generally recognized as a Blue Jay. They retired his number 2 years ago. Now, Danny, he was inducted into the Hall in his first year of eligibility with 85% of the vote, right, following the plane crash that claimed his life at age 40. Right. Now, Halladay won 20 games three times, 19 twice. Career total wins, just 203, ERA 3.38, 8 All-Star teams, 2 Cy Youngs, 1 in each league. Halladay, as I say, is Denny's kind of guy. He was known for his ability to pitch deep into games, wouldn't come out.
Sure
at the time of his retirement, he was the active major league leader in complete games with 67, including 20 shutouts. Now, Hall of Famer?
I don't know. You know, listen, he's a Hall of Famer because they said he was. I don't know. You know, does an accident, was a terrible accident, qualify you for the Hall of Fame because you won
a couple
games?
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
I know. I don't. If that is the reason why he got in the Hall of Fame, or one of the reasons he got in the Hall of Fame, then no, that's not the way you do it. I mean, there's a lot of other guys that died in some bad accidents too that aren't in the Hall of Fame that are pretty good players. And don't get it. When we in baseball, we've always overreacted to these kinds of events. We always have
life, not just baseball,
and in life in general.
Not Thurman. Well,
Baseball Reference, I like to talk about them because they're great. They compare every player to similar players, okay? So the 10 guys and big names compared with Roy Halladay, the only guy in the Hall of Fame, though a couple others will make it, like Scherzer.
Sure.
The only guy in the Hall of Fame is actually Dazzy Vance. He waited till 1955 to be elected, 20 years after he pitched his last game in 1935. So you see what I'm saying? I mean,
Dizzy Dean is in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
He only won about 100. He didn't win many more games than Denny did, 130 games maybe.
Right.
So
something like that.
I'm not going to call it a beauty contest. There's no, you know, they could say, well, you can just tell, is a guy a Hall of Famer or not? And it's very hard to say. We just did this about football last week. Is he a Hall of Famer or not? Those numbers sound pretty good. You shouldn't have to win necessarily. Sandy Koufax only won 166 games, I think. He's in the Hall of Fame. So it's very hard to compare apples to apples.
My father-in-law, of course, Lou Boudreau, Hall of Famer. I got to tell you that he used to say this about the Hall of Fame. He says, first of all, it is a beauty contest. That's number one. And you have to be the right beauty at the right time. If you're not the guy with the monster numbers, then you got to be the guy at the right time when it's a soft Hall of Fame election. So, and you can see that. Bill Mazeroski. How does Bill Mazeroski get in the Hall of Fame?
Over Lou Whitaker.
Right, over Lou Whitaker and guys like that. So
he had a home run that won a World Series. Everybody remembers that.
But one home run doesn't qualify.
But that gives him publicity and maybe pushes him over the edge.
And you know what? And nice guys have a tendency, although I'm going to contradict myself here, nice guys have a tendency to get more votes than guys that they didn't care for. And I'll give you the perfect example. Gil Hodges. Why isn't he in the Hall? Everybody loves Gil Hodges. Everybody. He was a class act. He always did the right thing, but can't get enough votes to get in the Hall of Fame. And they've been petitioning him for how many years? 40, 50?
Well, as we said, nice guys. Alan Trammell.
Yeah.
Lou Whitaker, nice guy, but not perceived that way.
Right.
It's the simplest example right there.
And the thing about this process, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the lone baseball writer who did not vote for Derek Jeter for the Hall has decided he's going to keep his ballot private. Baseball Writers Association releases the ballots of all 315 Hall of Fame voters, all the baseball writers. This gutless puke has decided, I'm going to stay anonymous.
Yeah, that's silly.
Yeah, that's true. He should. Well, you see how people react. We'll get to that in the Tom Izzo story in a moment.
Yeah.
There are haters out there. There are people that sit on the sidelines waiting for something to release their anger upon. Right. And these are all perfect examples where you can suddenly dump on anybody. And if this guy reveals who he is, who knows? Some Yankee fan might shoot him.
Let me make one more point about Pete Rose. One more. Pete Rose has made more money out of the Hall of Fame than he would ever made in the Hall of Fame.
That's not what he said.
I don't care what he says.
He said it's cost him $100 million.
He's made that twice, but what happens is he keeps throwing them damn dice. You know, you keep throwing them damn dice and betting on the wrong team, bad things happen. But that's the issue with Pete. He's made more money out of the game than he has in the game. And because every club in baseball would have him. Every year they'd have him. They would do certain things and give him 25, 30, 40, 50 grand to show up.
I got a great baseball story here. It's not going to be long. I see Eli's got the commercials. I have a little history lesson for Brandon and some of our younger listeners out there who most likely were not familiar with Dazzy Vance. It was announced this week that the Detroit Tigers soon will be represented in the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. As we all called him, Ozzie Virgil was the Tigers' first player of color.
Great guy.
Included in a new display. Now, this is something I didn't know. Do you know that Ozzie Virgil was the first Dominican to ever play in the major leagues? It wasn't Juan Marichal, anybody like that. It was actually Virgil.
I actually thought he was a Puerto Rican. I played with him in 63 in the Winter
League. Yeah,
what
kind of guy was he?
Hell of a guy. I mean, just the best. A gentleman. I mean, he not only was a player who played almost every night, but he was also one of the coaches. Bob Swift was the manager, the old catcher from the Tigers.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, so they had really had some good people down there. That's when we had Horton and Gates and all those guys that became the 68 Tigers.
If you told Ozzie Virgil back whenever in the 50s, as the first Dominican player, that in 50 years there'd be more Dominicans in the league than black guys and white guys combined, what would he have said? Yeah.
And here's a great, great part to close this story. His family, though he was Dominican, as I mentioned, actually immigrated to the United States either when he was 13, and they settled in the Bronx, where Ozzie graduated from DeWitt Clinton High School. He then served in the United States Marine Corps from 50 to 52.
That's right.
Such a guy, and fellas, this is actually his name, that they now have in the Dominican Republic the Osvaldo Virgil National Airport, named an airport after him in the DR.
Right? Good for him.
Osvaldo Virgil, that's his name. That is his name.
Hey,
I thought Bob was going somewhere that I didn't want him to go. I thought he was going to say, well, Ozzie would be upset if you called him the first Puerto Rican in baseball.
This is funny because we're going to get into Izzo in a moment, who's railing against Twitter. And I sure learned my lesson. I was telling this to my buddy here who I visited. And by the way, I'm 70 years old and I visited the kid across the street from the 1960s.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hey, the new lineup of 2020 Lincolns and Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln is exactly that. It is new. Lincoln's three new SUVs in the last year alone. They have made some major waves amongst the car review guys. Hey, the Nautilus, that was the first one of the new ones. I snapped up one of those. And then came the three-row Aviator way back in 2019. And lastly, the Corsair late in 2019 is now being touted as a 2020 SUV of the Year finalist. Check it out at Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln, all these great new Lincoln SUVs, including, of course, you got the Navigator, which was the nothing less than the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. Comes down to lifestyle. Which one of Lincoln's great SUVs best fits your taste and lifestyle? Here's how you do it. You go to Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership and shop them, drive them, see them, talk to the guys at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, where everyone gets the renowned star treatment. It's at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield, not that far from the home offices of Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Yes, check out Luke at 248-663-4748. He is the official wealth manager of the No Filter podcast. He'll create a plan to reach your financial goals, actually the whole Red Shovel Network. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your financial questions, whether retirement is fast approaching, whether you're a young guy trying to plan for the future, you got weddings and college education you'll have to pay for. Let Luke navigate the waters for you. It's Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. Call our friend Luke Nowacki. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, services referenced here independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, go ahead. Pick it up, Bob. What do you got next?
Let's go. I want to go to Ann Arbor on Tuesday night, where I really was not happy with what I saw. A now pretty mediocre Ohio State team, though they had a hot start this year, came in an important game, kicked Michigan's butt. John Teske was horrendous. It was horrendous. He scored 3 points and had 6 rebounds. Franz Wagner, 2 for 12 from the field. And Eli Brooks went 3 for 12, even missing a 3-point shot just about at the buzzer that would have tied the game and sent it into overtime. So, of course, we have Michigan hosting Michigan State on Saturday. We're all going to be tuned into that. But the thing I thought interesting about this game, the Michigan game, was Jay Billis stole the show. He spent all evening on TV complaining about the refereeing. Finally, 11:30 to go in the second half, Austin Davis, who had a great game for Michigan, he played very well. He got fouled by 2 different Ohio State guys on the same play. No call. Now, the score is only 38-38 midway through the second half. And Billis says, quote, "The reason that score is what it is because this has become a football game. It's a football game. And we are seeing this throughout college basketball," end quote. So Billis blames the officiating and the supervisors who want college basketball called this way, thus making it an ugly game.
Well, that is a much bigger issue than I wasn't able to see the game. I was down here in Florida and not near a TV that had the Big Ten Network like you. But the end of the game, all that could have been ignored, that Michigan lost a very key game to Ohio State in a game they really needed to win if they're going to make this tournament, was the final play. Xavier Simpson makes a layup. He's assessed a flagrant 1 on the play. As he's falling to the floor, it appeared to me, I saw the replay 10 times, he grabs the jersey of Kyle Young to try and brace his fall. He partially rips it, and they call it a flagrant 1, which made the difference. Of course, Eli Brooks could hit that.
Eli's totally right about that. You may not have seen the game, but you're damn right.
Yeah,
it wasn't that big a foul. He was trying to protect himself, and he didn't, like, yank the guy.
If you were watching, did they review it many times and still make that decision?
This
is the whole thing with officiating that we have faced in the last year, where the world thinks one thing and watches it and sees it 10 times, and the ruling is the exact opposite. So either they're idiots or we're idiots, and it's hard to figure out which.
Yeah. I've never seen Billis go off like that before. Now, I mentioned what a bad night Teske had. He gave up 15 points to Ohio State's big man, Caleb Wesson, in the first half. Wesson kicked his ass, 23 points and 12 rebounds. And if I were John Teske, I'd be looking in the mirror right now. Do I want to continue my basketball career, or do I want to be the world's tallest insurance salesman next year?
Oh Bob, stop.
Let's put it this way.
You didn't even watch the game. This kid looks terrible.
Bob,
what's the matter with him?
He had a bad night. He just had a bad night. I mean,
he's had a few bad nights lately.
Then he's had a few bad nights, but it doesn't make him that he's got to go sell insurance. Not that selling insurance is anything bad.
You want to play in the NBA playing like this?
There's a bigger issue here, and the bigger issue is they don't have many good shooters. If the other guys could shoot, then Teske could do what Teske does, which is rebound, outlet pass, and occasionally throw a 3 that makes me want to pull my hair out, but some of them occasionally go in.
So it's a
shooting problem. You know, it's an interesting game. We can analyze defense. Yeah. We can analyze this, the other thing. If you don't put that round ball into that circle that's a little bit bigger, then everything is magnified. They just can't shoot. They miss Isaiah Livers. Is he back? He wasn't back for the game. They miss Isaiah Livers. They miss Jordan Poole, who left for the NBA.
Right.
They miss a lot of guys.
They miss consistency from a guy Eli and I have been wailing on a little bit, though he's just a freshman. Franz Wagner,
he can't shoot. Terrible
the other night. He's in and out. Sometimes he looks great.
And they miss the consistency.
They're a bubble team.
And they miss consistency with the refereeing, too. And what I mean by that is ever since the New Orleans games took place and they did not get the call on that one play, it seems to me, and I may be totally off base, but it seems to me that all of the games have got a little bit more physical. Somebody drew a line in the sand and said, we're going to let them play a little bit. And they're letting these kids play, especially in college. They're really playing.
And I'm seeing a lot of 130 to 120 scores in the NBA, and I don't like that either.
That's way too much basketball.
There was so much going on that night. I'm trying to record all these things. So I'm recording. Michigan game is my priority. I want to record Duke. I want to see the Florida Panthers play against Columbus. Oh, and by the way, former University of Michigan standout and Grosse Pointe, Michigan native Zach Werenski had the winning goal in overtime, 1-0. Columbus has been great, and the Panthers have been good too. But anyway, so I had to get that plug in. So,
but you know what? Thank you for not saying. And as you and Denny don't know anything about hockey,
right.
And I do, because you certainly didn't see the game. I'll tell you what happened: is you're a bunch of idiots. Thank you for not wanting to expose us.
Well, that there's no need to say that because the listeners already know us.
Oh,
why would
Bob,
I say that?
Bob, you don't want to go there.
Anyway, I realize the Michigan State game has started. So frantically, I turn it on to start my tape. It's on the way. The first shot I see is the little guy going insane. The first shot, he's running, screaming at the referees, and he gets a technical. And Tom was at it all game long, man. I mean, again, this officiating is tough, and Izzo's not going to take it.
Let me throw this in there. Because this is a great soundbite. Not only is he going to not take that, but Tom is so far behind the curve on this Twitter stuff. I learned it when I said innocently enough on our show about 6 months ago that young Hispanic players really look up to Miguel Cabrera. And when I got eviscerated on Twitter for saying, well, you shouldn't just cite Hispanic players. All players look up to him. Why are you citing Hispanic players? To, of course, which I should say, so in other words, Jewish players shouldn't look up to Sandy Koufax, and black players shouldn't look up to Jackie Robinson. That's just the way it is. And so this is what some Twitterers are going after Izzo's players, either by calling them, you know, whatever nasty thing. And here's what Izzo had to say about Twitter. It's kind of funny.
But I'm going to tell you something, guys, and I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. If there's any Michigan State people out there that are abusing some of my players on that frickin' Twitter, I'm sick of it. Okay? I'm sick of dealing with what I got to deal with on that. So if they are Michigan State fans, I'd be more than happy to buy their tickets. And I mean that.
Tom, you think it's bad now?
Yeah,
you wish you kept your mouth shut after saying that.
He's gotten so thin-skinned, and I don't know if he was trying to make a point the other day or not, but I'm getting tired of him ripping the fans. The fans pay the money. The fans show up. They cheer for him when they win. They don't get so
he's
happy
not
when they lose.
He's ripping all the fans, Danny.
Well,
it's just some of these
but
clowns
you know
on
what?
Twitter. That's
you
all.
Cannot do what he's doing. It's so minor league. This is the big leagues, Bob. This is the big leagues. If you can't take the pressure from the big leagues, then God bless you. Go sell insurance.
100% agree with Denny McClain on that one. By bringing it up, all he's doing is he is inviting another assault. Shut up. You know what you do? Tell your players to get off Twitter. Then they won't see the Twitter crap to show it to you. Get off of it. In fact, I know a guy that speaks to NBA players before when they come in as a rookie. He said, I got three suggestions for you. You got to do all three. Don't use Twitter, and don't use Twitter, and you got a much easier career.
Tom wasn't the only guy pissed off in that game. Pat Chambers, the Penn State coach, he's leading. I mean, they're beating Michigan State throughout. He's leading 43-37 at half. Right before the half, he gets a T. He gets a technical, okay? So the halftime reporter asks him, what did you say? Chambers said, the only thing I said to the official, this was after a delay of game call, the only thing I said to the official was one word, warning. In other words, he wondered why the official didn't give him a warning about the delay of game instead of bang, teeing him up. I mean, again, this officiating stuff, it's getting pretty crazy out there.
We have to say goodbye to our radio listeners on WCWA in Toledo and on WDFN in Detroit. Thank you for joining us. The rest of you, stick around because amongst other great things, we have got the world famous and immensely popular mailbag. Thanks for listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I hadn't really finished talking about State yet, but that's okay. I mean, Cassius Winston had a pretty good game, actually. But it's like, you know, when I followed my beloved 1968 Detroit Tigers, every night it was somebody else winning the game. When you have a bad team, every night it's somebody else losing the game. Cassius Winston essentially lost this game down the stretch because he missed a free throw with State down one. He still had a chance to send it into overtime. He missed a three-pointer there, and so State lost to Penn State in the game. He's not getting any help. And there is some luster that has been lost from this Michigan State-Michigan game Saturday because neither team is playing real well right now, to tell you the truth.
That's the nature of the Big Ten. In fact, this was the Spartans' first home loss, 75-70 to Penn State, before Izzo went off the other night, which is pretty good. But, you know, it's a tough league. It's late in the season, and all that matters is getting into the tournament, and all things are forgiven there. I think we tend to go on short-term results and make, again, long-term prognostications. Michigan State's pretty damn good. They're a lot better than they were in the beginning of the year when they were losing 4-5 or whatever it was. And I think put it this way, Michigan State's got a much better chance of going far than Michigan, because Michigan State can at least make a basket every now and then.
Yeah, and I was going to ask both of you, what do you think? Is Michigan going to get in? I don't think they're going to get in.
That loss was not good. And if they don't beat Michigan State at home this Saturday, you're right, Denny. Yep. They could be headed for trouble, depending, we always talk about this, when Livers comes back and how much he can play. Now, Xavier Simpson looked good against Ohio State despite the loss, scored 15. He had been suspended for that one game for who knows. As usual, the feckless Detroit media didn't get up off their collective butts to dig into this. And we talked about this in the last show. So Drew Augustine tweeted me, and an unnamed texter did the same in our mailbag this week. What the deal was is that Simpson apparently got drunk, got real rowdy at a bar. Well, enough people saw what happened. Okay. He got drunk. He got rowdy at a bar. End of story. He's a college kid. College kids do that. It's unfortunate. And he was humbled. And speaking of the difficulty of winning on the road, as Michigan State may find out in Ann Arbor Saturday, did you see that Purdue-Iowa game? I mean, on Wednesday night, Purdue is, you know, they're okay, but it's such a tough place to play. Unranked. Iowa ranked 17th in the country with one of the great players in America, as you know, their center. They lost to Purdue 104-68. Jeez.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
NBA trade deadline Thursday afternoon as we record the show. We're not going to get into all who's going somewhere because we don't even know yet. The 76ers, I want to mention this, did get former University of Michigan star Glenn Robinson III from Golden State. But there's too much stuff going on. The Pistons, as we record, hadn't made a deal. Drummond with 31-19 Wednesday night at the Pistons' home win over Phoenix. Maybe he wants to get out of Detroit. That's why he played so well.
I've got a question. Is it me or is it the atmosphere, the entertainment value, or the lack of it right now with the trading thing being able to be lit up? I don't hear anything. I don't hear any excitement that this guy's going here and this guy's going there. What's going on to everyone?
Well, if you're talking about it locally, because the Pistons are non-entities.
I'm talking about nobody of great value to trade except Drummond.
We'll see what happens by the deadline.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anybody see the Wings game the other night?
No.
So they're playing the Flyers.
Oh, geez.
They're down 2-0 at home. And with 3:36 left in the game, after Jonathan Bernier had stood on his head a lot of the night, he pulls Bernier. You're pulling your goalie with what? 3:36 left in the game, and the Wings were just starting a power play at that time? So, of course, they wound up losing, 3-0 in a shutout. One of the few things I've seen with this team this year is that Jonathan Bernier is just traditionally a backup goaltender. Water seeks its own level, they say. But the way this guy has played under horrible circumstances makes me think that he could go into the next season as the Wings' number one goaltender, and they might be okay.
Well, he might be the favorite for it because Jimmy Howard will be gone, and he's the incumbent. Now, before we move on to the mailbag and talk to Fred Heumann, I want you all to watch the debut of the new football league, the XFL. I know everybody laughs at it.
Right.
They may not make it. They failed once. There's so many failed leagues, you kind of make fun of them beforehand. They failed back in 2001 by trying to make it this ultra-violent, show-busy, skimpy uniforms. Now Vince McMahon's taken the entire total different approach to make it serious football. He wants to make the games faster. I think I definitely have to see it as a broadcaster see what's going on. But there's going to be some interesting touches. A team, after every touchdown, you can't kick an extra point. You either take a play from the 2, 5, or 10 yard line worth 1, 2, or 3 points. So no kicking plays allowed. They're also allowing the double pass. Now, in the NFL today, you have to throw the pass backwards, the first one, to have a second pass.
Right.
You can throw a forward pass behind the line of scrimmage and have another one go downfield. So they're going to try a few things. They're going to try and make it a faster game in 2 hours. And let's see whether Vince McMahon, who's a brilliant promoter who blew it once, can create a product that is actually worth seeing.
Sounds like a little Canadian with all these guys running around, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So now we go to the mailbag.
Mailbag.
And, you know, I this trip down here to South Florida for Eli has been wonderful. He played golf the last couple of days. We went out great at night on Delray Beach last night. He's calming down. He was a little uptight this morning, but he's calming down.
Don't accuse me of calming down.
Okay. I spoke too soon. So Ron Grubbs, the longtime
radio
sportscaster. Grubber says, I listened to the latest show this morning. Eli just wanted to get the show over with so he could catch his flight to Florida. Here's a thought. Either record the show earlier or take a later flight. Or be like Denny and just drive wherever you want to go. So I told Grubber that this tweet of his would be a great contribution to our mailbag, and he tweeted back, always glad to contribute to the mailbag segment and bust Eli's chops at the same time. Perhaps he should use some of Denny's edibles to help him relax before recording the podcast. Don't know. John Aiello.
When I start buying weed from Denny, it's a strange world.
It's too funny.
John Aiello writes, Bob, you've known Eli a long time. I have a question. I've been laughing over your show after show. How does a guy who loves marijuana as much as Eli Zarrett, how is he so frickin' uptight all the time? Get him some edibles for the show.
Well, the problem is I start the day with coffee, and I need the edibles later to have me come down from the coffee. It's kind of my own version of a speedball. Great question, though.
Great question, deserves a great follow-up. And here is the single greatest tweet that we have received since the inception of this show.
Really?
Are you ready?
Really?
This is from there's a guy who actually has the Twitter handle, the Not Awful Mailbag, because he loves the mailbag segment.
Oh,
he wants to
God.
Keep it. This is what he tweeted. I have no idea who he is. This is what he tweeted the other day.
Has he got a name?
To the no filter.
Has he got a name there?
No, I said I don't know who he is. Oh, there's okay. no name. No, he just goes by the Not Awful Mailbag.
Okay.
Ode to the No Filter Sports Podcast mailbag. We can't bear it, and he deserves a demerit when Eli Zarrett opines that the mailbag has no merit. Thanks to you, the sage Mr. Page, and Denny from the many, for saving our beloved mailbag.
Like that, Eli. Even Eli's choking over that.
What about else that? Actually, these aren't bad today.
Not
these
bad
are
at all.
The better mailbag.
That's usually
very,
pretty good.
That's very
Jeremiah
good.
Ludington. Tweeted or wrote us. He loves the podcast, so on and so forth. Now, again, we get this request sometimes. He'd like to hear from some of the Detroit play-by-play and color guys. He mentions Dan Dickerson, Ken Cal, and Mickey Redmond. But, you know,
what are they going to say?
They're just going to promote the team and give the PR Pollyanna take. That's why we – I mean, I like all those guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mark writes, I really love the interviews you guys do, but I think you missed a couple things in your interview with Milt Wilcox. You didn't bring up his beef with George Brett. I would have loved to hear what Milt had to say about Brett. He didn't go after anyone else like that. Could he have tried to grease up the ball, got it, and maybe it got away from him when he pitched to Brett? So there were some issues there, I guess.
You know, I don't even really remember that from the old days. I mean, I covered Milt Wilcox every pitch he threw here, and I that one escapes me.
Yeah, but I don't recall it either.
Those were from AskNoFilter.com, where you can email us. You can call us and leave a message or text us, 760-89-BALLS. Here is an unnamed texter. Bob's storytelling style is dope.
That's good.
That means
positive.
Good,
that's
right?
Good,
that's positive.
Think,
okay. Eli and Denny both acknowledged they were listening to follow where he was going. That's entertainment. Thank you, unnamed texter. Here's another one from an unnamed texter.
You know what you can do? That's such a good – you could put that and frame it next to the picture of yourself. Over
yeah, and then and you know what I'm
By the way,
do?
His portrait is over his bed.
Right. No, it's and not.
It's over his freaking bed.
When I have two or three attractive younger women in bed with me, one has to look at the picture while the others look at me.
What are they doing? What are they doing with you? Making pancakes?
No, yeah, we're usually playing, you know, solitaire or bridge.
I'll guarantee you it's solitaire.
All right. So anyway, another one says a few things. This one texter said, "Epic interview with Mike Lotus, loved it." And then he says, and we're going to frame this too. Eli is an absolute professional. We really appreciate Eli creating this podcast. Isn't that nice?
That's very nice.
Very good.
Very nice.
Here's one that I wanted to respond to. he says, and again, there's no name attached to this, you guys have to review recruiting lists. The 35th best player in high school, point guard, committed to MSU a month ago. Lawyer, as I've said, Foster Lawyer is not going to start at point guard for State next year. A.J. Holgert is. Well, first of all, Michigan State recruited a great point guard out of Flint this year, but he decommitted. They do have Holgert, I think, from West Virginia. He's a four-star, not a five-star player. And State and Louisville were the only two really top programs who did recruit him. Kentucky didn't, Duke didn't, Carolina didn't, and even Tom Izzo at the introductory press conference to talk about this kid, I guess the kid wasn't there, it shouldn't be an introductory conference, said he needs to shoot better. Hey.
Yeah, I don't get into the recruiting stuff, and my last example of that was Tariq Black. I was so excited that Michigan was going to get this incredible wide receiver. I read everything about him, his upbringing, where he played high school, how terrific he was, how he looked in camp. And what happens? He transfers 3 years later after not doing much. So I think getting overly excited about 17-year-olds is really pushing a little bit. But hopefully he's a great point guard. But the fact that we didn't talk about him extensively and how he's going to be the greatest point guard since Petit and Cleaves, I didn't think was necessary.
And we haven't really mentioned much about high school recruiting either because there are too many players and you don't know. Here's another one in support of Eli today. It comes from friend of the show, Jim Mulhern. Dear Bob, I really appreciated Eli's struggle to understand and relate to the seemingly over-the-top outpouring of grief on Kobe Bryant. I had the same struggle. At my age, 55, I did not relate to Kobe Bryant, and I saw him as what he was, a tremendous basketball talent cut down too soon.
Thank you for that. I didn't want to demean Kobe in any way, shape, or form. He's a great athlete. What I was trying to say, and I can't remember if I did or not, is that I gave up the hero worship thing a long time. This is a very symbolic what happened to Kobe. It's terrible. Losing his daughter was terrible. But it happens every day, and to those other people in the helicopter also shows us how we tend to focus as these prime examples of life's perilous nature and how, bereavement and grief is built into the human condition. I just thought that I also wasn't aware of my own fault that he was the international icon that apparently he was.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is we never tried to demean him, not by any stretch of any imagination. Whatever we brought up and whatever we talked about is stuff that we knew about and stuff that we had read. So, I mean, we didn't do anything bad. I mean, on top of that, my whole point to that whole thing was we're in the Midwest. We don't see what happens in the dog and pony show out there very often. You know, first of all, Eli and I go to bed every night at 7:30, not together, but to bed. So we don't have a chance to watch the late news or ESPN.
But I also said, I admit it, I misjudged the depth of the reaction. I did. It still surprised me. Go ahead. Anything else?
10:45 last night. We're out again. One of the greatest. If folks, you guys who've been there, you know what Delray Beach is like. We're having fun. At 10:45, we just finished. Hey, let's go out and get a pop. Maybe find some music. I'm going home. I said, what's only 10:45? I'm exhausted. I got to go to bed. So we came home. That's what we did.
You played golf yesterday?
I got up at 5:30 in the morning and played 18 holes of golf. Go ahead.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, did well. That's the reason he was tired, chasing that ball in the weeds all day.
I guess so. Josh writes,
but there's more. Make this the last one.
Well, I can do that if you want, but I mean, we get
Denny,
so.
Denny, had enough? One or two, Denny? Your call.
One.
All right. Then just, I can read any one of these I want, so I'm going to deliberately choose this one. This is the one because of you two guys. I'm choosing this one.
Wait a second. 120 seconds or less.
This will be 25.
Okay.
Josh writes, I really appreciate all your great episodes and great guests. Your post-Super Bowl episode was so funny. Thank you so much. And an exclamation part. Bob, you have grown on me as the best sports personality on the show.
Oh my
just don't
God.
Tell Eli and Denny. I want you to understand that the podcast is just great. I work midnights and your chemistry helps my day and night. I didn't have to read that because of your attitude. I did.
All right, one of the better mailbags. I enjoyed that. Thanks for listening, everybody.
He has calmed down, folks. He likes the mailbag now.
I like this one today. We're unable to hook up with Fred Heumann. Maybe another time. And by the way, Bob, I got a final question before we ask where Denny's going to be. Did you make the monogrammed page hand towels yourself that say Page on it in beautiful embroidery, or was that a gift?
That was a gift from Kelly Page, my daughter.
Right. I thought it would be perfect for you to make your own monogrammed towels for us all, so we remember that we're at attending Chateau Page here in West Palm. Denny, where are you this weekend?
I'm going to be in Schererville, Indiana, which is a suburb of Chicago. If you on Sunday, only a Sunday show, so if you get a chance, I think some of the Bears are going to be there again. So if you get a chance, come on out and say hello.
Schererville? How do you spell that? Can people look it up?
Yes. It's a place that a lot of shows are held. Schererville, Indiana.
Right, thanks. Like Billy Shearer, right? Yeah.
All right,
left-hander.
All right, everybody. We'll see you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.